and welcome to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am your host, Adam A. Donaldson. Joining me in a bit will be Peter Wesley Salmon. He will be doing the review this week, or I will be doing the review with him this week. Just to break the ice a little, which is a one way of putting it, considering that I'm looking at it snow outside right now. As you may know, we record these little ditties in advance, and as I'm sitting here, it is snowing. 1 week ago, when I was last sitting here recording this, it was warm and sunny. So we are really changing the channel quick here on our weather seasons, but that's okay, because we're indoors, and that is where we do all our recording for the radio. But I digress. End Credits is a local movie show for local movie fans. We are here every Wednesday at 3 p.m. to talk the latest in pop culture and review the newest movies, which this week will be the new comedy drama On the Rocks, which you can stream right this very second on Apple TV Plus. If you don't know about Apple TV Plus, it is Apple started its kind of own streaming service, which they fold into the whole Apple TV app. So, you know, you may rent movies or buy movies or TV shows on the Apple TV app, but for an additional fee, you will get access to this Apple TV Plus, which is where you can find shows like In the Morning. What is that called? The Morning News? Anyway, the one with Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon, and then there's a show with Jason Momoa, where he plays a blind warrior. Anyway, it's a whole thing. So speaking of TV, and speaking of, you know, expanding the TV universe and comebacks and things, because, you know, one of the things that's going on right now is the launch of these new streaming services, and usually these streaming services are launched with, like, reboots or continuations of series that are already been released. A really good example of that is the Peacock streaming service in the States, and one of the flagship shows it has launched is the Saved by the Bell reboot, which you can watch here in Canada on W Network for some reason. But anyway, it made me think, you know, if we're going to be rebooting stuff, and why shouldn't we reboot stuff? There's lots of stuff in the world to reboot, so why not? Why don't we talk about some other stuff that can be rebooted or relaunched or continued, whatever you like. I mean, this is kind of a trend already, and I decided to focus on sci-fi and fantasy shows from the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s. This is something that's already been done, some successfully, like Charmed. There's a new version of Charmed. There's a new version of Roswell. There was a new version of Unsolved Mysteries as well, which is on Netflix, a show that ran for years and years in the 80s and 90s. So it made me think, what other shows could we bring back and, you know, rejigger and repackage and reformat for the current era? Something like Roswell, for example, which is not kind of like a straight reboot or a straight remake of either the book series it was based on or the original TV series from the 90s. It did take the source material and use it in a new and different way to try and make a statement or a commentary on illegal immigration, because the, in case you don't know the story about Roswell, it's about three aliens who were part of the supposed crash landing in 47, and they grow up and as, you know, supposedly, you know, they look human, but so they integrate themselves into human society, and so there's a, I guess, a correlation that they're trying to draw with the new series between the real illegal immigration from people from Central and South America and the science fiction illegal immigration of aliens who crash land in New Mexico. So now that I've set that stage rather barbarously, I'm going to go through some of my selections. I'm going to start with a simple one. The one's already been sort of adapted by a TV show. There's a movie in the 80s called Alien Nation, which is a cool pun on words, but also has a double meaning as an alien nation. A UFO crash lands in California, and its people end up becoming part of the California, especially in the Los Angeles area. And the film is kind of like a neo-noir. It's about a cop played by James Caan who's trying to solve a case. He has a new alien partner that he's trying to do that with. The TV series, which is based on the movie, has a lot of that. It's a kind of very Law and Order procedural kind of episodic structure, but it also goes very deeply into not just the alien culture, but also the the new kind of systemic racism that they encounter being alien people on planet Earth. And I mean, I think this is in so much as the Roswell producers recognize this too. There's sort of a rich dramatic opportunity in bringing back this idea. You don't even necessarily have to continue the original Alienation series or the original movie, but you can certainly play with these ideas and these characters and concepts in a new format, and that would I think be able to form some interesting drama. It's definitely an idea that you can introduce anytime, and I think it would still work. Along these lines, there was a show called The 4400 in the early 2000s, and they've already been talking about rebooting this in some way, but I would much be more interested, I think, in a continuation, because the concept of the series was that 4,400 people were taken over a 50-year stretch from like 1945 to like the present day. They are returned all at once in one place, and when they come back, they have been altered. They now have superpowers, essentially. And the series basically follows along why they were taken in the first place, why they were given superpowers, what the effects they were hoping, the people who took them hoped they would create. And the series leaves off with, interestingly, a disease where one of the people who comes back with powers, one of the powers they develop is that they become basically a Typhoid Mary. And this disease, either it only works on every one of two people. One out of every two people gets a disease, gets a superpower. The other person dies when they catch this disease. And so it ends with the city of Seattle basically being cordoned off from the rest of America, with basically only the superpowered people in charge. And because the series ended at around 2007, 2008, it might be interesting now to look back and or to pick up where that left off and said, what does this society look like almost 20 years later? You know, did the superpower people create a better world? Were they subjugated, put underfoot? What happened? What happened to this world? That might be worth exploring. Another one I'd like to point out is from the 90s. It is called Space Above and Beyond. It was from two of the producers of The X-Files. And it basically supposes that, Earth has started to colonize space, and then they encounter the first alien race that they've ever encountered, and it starts a war. And it would be interesting considering, I mean, when the 90s happened, there was kind of no war. The Cold War was over. It was kind of this weird, kind of odd period in the history where there was, relative peace. Now that we've lived through 20 years of like near constant war, could we pace that over this idea of the space above and beyond? Like, suppose this war is in like its 10th or 20th year. What does that look like? How are people coping? How are people still fighting? Is there end in sight? That might be an interesting way to reboot that project. Just floating that out there. Another one, and maybe this is my personal, ideas talking, my personal taste. In the 90s, there was Sequest DSV, where it was produced by Steven Spielberg, and it's basically about this like giant submarine. It's on this exploration mission in the ocean. Interestingly, I think it takes place in 2018, so we're a little... we're a little bit past that point. We're not colonizing the ocean yet. We don't have giant mile-long submarines patrolling the ocean yet. But, I mean, we're learning interesting new things about the ocean all the time, the creatures that live there. I mean, there's also the geopolitical stuff of, you know, climate change, rising sea levels, the melting of the polar ice caps, creating access to new minerals and materials that were previously inaccessible, and the fights over that. I mean, the Arctic's a big thing where Russia and Canada, the US, the Nordic European powers all kind of trying to stake a claim to what is buried under where there was once Arctic ice, and where there's considerably less Arctic ice from once there was. And plus, it'd be really just a fun show. I mean, maybe I'm just showing my my nerdiness here, but, you know, a TV show about a submarine having adventures and running into Krakens, which I think is something that did actually happen on the original Sequest. You could probably keep the talking dolphin. I don't think we need a talking dolphin if we decide to reboot this. That was a big thing on Sequest. The original one was the talking dolphin, and maybe that's a wee bit too silly for the modern TV viewer. I mean, it was pretty silly for the 90s TV viewer, but there you go. Nowhere Man, it lasted 1 year, but it's basically about this guy who wakes up one day and finds out his life is not his life. His wife is with another man. Nobody recognizes him at his job or his apartment building. His neighbors don't recognize him. Even his own mother doesn't recognize him because she has like medical issues. But he does have this picture, these negatives of American soldiers in South America doing something. And he comes to believe he's being chased for this reason, that he has the key to some sort of conspiracy even he doesn't understand, while also trying to piece together the fact that nobody from his old life remembers him. I think there's something, the 90s were a very paranoid time, and I think we've come back around to embracing that paranoia again. I mean, imagine, it's even more difficult to erase someone now with like Facebook and social media and phones. It's like, how would you go about that? I mean, how isolating would that make you feel, even more so now? And in this era where people's online identities are their identities, it would be fairly interesting to play with some of those tropes and ideas, given the anonymity that the internet creates and how many of us feel anonymous from each other. There's something there, I will say. Maybe I'll just, to wrap up, I'll tackle two of the big ones. So one of them is, and I've been rewatching some Stargate SG-1 lately, so this is why it's top of mind. It's been like 2007, 2008 since Stargate Universe, which was the last Stargate show, was canceled. And this is one of those things where it just feels like so bizarre. Like when Star Trek Discovery came out, it's like, really? It took people this long to come back around and say, hey, you know what should be on TV? Star Trek. Well, I feel like the same thing about Stargate. You have about 400 hours of programming to choose from. And there's a weird thing here where MGM, which owns the rights to Stargate, tried to launch this like Stargate porthole where it was like you can watch all of Stargate on this one sort of streaming site. And then they tried to launch like a weirdo prequel series that was like, it was like a Quibi show where it was like 10-minute chunks, and then they turned it into a movie for home video release after that. But it's just like Stargate deserves so much better, and it's such an easy setup because it's about a alien porthole that takes you to different worlds. It's like, well, it's not that complicated, guys. You put together a team of people, you send them off to other worlds, and they have like these morality plays, and there's action and humor and all the other thing. To wrap up, and this is kind of what inspired the list, is that I'm part of a Babylon 5 Facebook group, and there's somebody posting the other day, it's like, why isn't somebody bringing this back? And I agree. I mean, there's obviously still a huge fan. There's a very active Facebook page about all about Babylon 5. I'm not sure I'd be in favor of a remake. It's like I think the original series is still pretty tight. But I mean, it is a great big expansive universe with a lot of interesting alien races and characters and concepts. It's got a really fascinating and multifaceted mythology to it. You could very easily do something like, I don't want to say Babylon 5, the next generation, but that's basically what I'm getting at, is looking forward and, you know, maybe what does this universe look like 100 years after the original Babylon 5? There are characters called the Rangers who are basically like these warrior monks who protect the peace. You know, there's mythology, there's ancient technologies, there's space wizards. There is actually space wizards in this universe, the techno mages who have technology so advanced it looks like magic. There's so many directions you could go with this, and the case with Stargate, it kind of saddens me that there are people sitting on this kind of really interesting, intrinsic franchises that do have a lot of fans, and instead they tried to turn board games into movies, or they tried to turn they just signed the guy who made Creed 2 the other day to make the next Transformers movie. It's like, why don't you sign him up to make Babylon 5 the Next Generation? But I digress. Coming up next, something that's definitely not a sci-fi franchise from the 90s. It is a movie called On the Rocks. And we will review it after this break. You are listening to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio. Where is your love? Don't you give me your love? Don't you give me your... This'll be the last time I ever do your...
My foot smell funny? Because I was wondering.
We're watching Breaking Bad.
What?
It's really good.
It's a great show. Have you seen it?
Yes, I have seen it. It's great. It's not for kids.
What? Was there something bad on?
No.
Yeah.
Hey, look, I can shuffle.
Oh, wow, that's great.
We learned that all young girls should know how to shuffle and how to...
Bluff.
Bluff, right. And how do you bluff?
Poker face.
Nice.
And that was a clip from On the Rocks. It's the new film from writer and director Sofia Coppola, and it stars Rashida Jones, Bill Murray, Marlon Wayans, Jessica Henwick, and Jenny Slate. I am now being joined on the line by Peter Salmon. Peter, how are you?
Doing good. Just living life. Living life as per usual. Hope everyone else is still living life. I guess if they're listening, they are living life, but I hope that remains.
Life. It almost sounds like you hope everyone is still alive.
Exactly.
Not too far from the reality.
Yeah.
But tell us, Peter, you are almost done your last semester.
Yeah. Finishing it up with the good old history. And then who knows what's going to happen. I'm going to try for that master's, but we'll see, right? And I hope school's going well for everybody else. It's coming to an end. It's coming to... Well, this semester. This is not school overall. You know? But we got, how many days? Really two weeks? Really 2 weeks and we're done. Two and a half?
Yeah. Nice. I mean... So far, we're like a minute in, and it's been phrased, we hope everyone's still alive, and it's 2 weeks from coming to an end.
Yeah, so. I have a little peeve, though, that the U of G hasn't added any extra holidays, extra winter breaks, whereas pretty much everybody else has. You know, Laurier, everybody. That's okay, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Well, every other school used to do, like, two reading weeks, and we only did one, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're just in, I guess, more, I don't know, calm area, I guess, or suicides or less. I don't know. We had three the 1 year, though, so I kind of find that hard to believe, but...
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like we could really use a pickup of some kind, which is why we are reviewing On the Rocks this week, which is the new Sofia Coppola film starring Bill Murray. So I think if anything can pick us up, it is this. So I know this has been on your radar, Peter. Maybe you could start by talking about why you wanted to review On the Rocks.
Oh, well, I'm just a huge Sofia Coppola fan. I had been listening to the Armchair Expert, the Dax podcast, and she discussed it. And yeah, it just seemed like my cup of tea. I also wanted an excuse to try out good old Apple TV Plus, although I would not recommend it. Yeah, well, I just love everybody in it. I love Bill Murray. I love good old Rashida Jones and the Wayans. And the second I saw Wayans' last name, I was like, okay, yeah, I gotta definitely put this on the roster. So, yeah, those are my main reasonings for it. It just looked good, too. Great reviews. Although I would have wanted to review it. The reviews didn't matter. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what about you? Were you hesitant? I always forget if you hate Sofia Coppola or just really dislike her.
No, I don't hate Sofia Coppola at all. I admittedly, I was interested in seeing what new she could do with Bill Murray. Bill Murray, I mean, he's for a while been... I mean, before they teamed up for Lost in Translation, he was already making that kind of transition to doing more kind of drama stuff and more... more complicated stuff. He'd already been in Rushmore at that point. So teaming up with her for Lost in Translation was interesting. And so seeing them team up again for On the Rocks, which has a very similar... I don't think the style's the same, but I mean, it has a very kind of similar feeling overall because it's about Bill Murray with... a younger woman, in this case Rashida Jones, playing his daughter, and they're kind of going on a journey of self-discovery together. And yeah, does, you know, Bill Murray's Murrayness hold up, and how does he work with Rashida Jones, and how's the chemistry with Sofia Coppola all this time? So I mean, all that made me very interested in watching it, and like you, I was looking for an excuse to try Apple TV Plus, and like you, I'm disappointed.
Yeah, it's not great. Anybody listening, I would really maybe wait a year, 2 years, see what they've got. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, not to get too far into Apple TV Plus, but I mean, the core problem is that they don't have like a library that's in addition to the original stuff that they're trucking in, which is like this, the sweet part of any streaming service, which is not just like the new stuff that they are producing for the streaming service, but you know, what else they have in terms of the back library, which is why, you know, the HBO Max in the States and the Peacock in the States are, you know, so much more interesting because there's more to it than just, you know, in the case of Peacock, the new Saved by the Bell reboot. And in the case of like HBO Max, there's the West Wing reunion and the new Kaley Cuoco show. But I mean, they also have.
Oh, and the Fresh Prince too, right?
Yeah, Peacock's doing the relaunch of Fresh Prince. That's right. That's the maybe not ultra serious reboot of Fresh Prince, but a definitely more serious minded Fresh Prince. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, HBO, not HBO. Apple should have maybe just waited a couple of years, because I really do have respect for the directors that they've got full signings with. But yeah, just not enough for them yet.
The talent is great. I mean, it's a deep bench of talent, but unless unless you're like really anxious to watch, I don't know, The Morning Show, which I know got Emmy nominations and all that, or the M. Night Shyamalan show, I think it's called Baby, or any, like, I mean, there's just not a lot of there yet.
Yeah, exactly. And what is there even the great, or what's there that's great? If you did like a calculation, you could watch it all in one day, probably, right? We got a whole 24 hours in one day, right?
Well, maybe not all the shows, but...
I'm not including... Yeah, I guess the morning show, but...
I mean, you could probably sample every show in a day.
Yeah. You could definitely watch every movie. Like, every every original. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, it's very true.
But that didn't dampen my view of the film, or at least, you know, I tried to block that.
No, me neither. Because On the Rocks is, I mean, because I do believe it is something they bought from A24. Like, it wasn't that Apple hired Sofia Coppola to make a movie.
Like, she had this movie in her mind for, like, for a few years now. It was mostly just, A24 since the beginning, but she needed kind of a more firm platform for release, especially during the COVID, like you said. And I think it was a smart choice. I think even though we were bashing it, it's a good place for her to make a deal. You know, like an A-list director getting some sort of kind of a firm deal going.
No, she's in good company on Apple TV Plus. So the movie itself, I've heard a lot of people online say it was boring. I don't think I was especially bored, but I also would think...
No, I was bored.
Yeah, but I can understand the point of view that it's not like a very... I mean, obviously, it Sofia Coppola doesn't make action movies, but, I mean, the action isn't kind of the point. I feel like this is a very kind of slice of life kind of movie, that the whole point is sort of the monotony.
Well, that's what a lot of her films do, right? They show more social matters and issues, and, you know, a lot of times historical events. But yeah, like the kind of social matters and such. I can see how that kind of bores some people, because she does view that in kind of a more calm way. But I think if you actually pay attention, or if you're like me, you do enjoy just conversations or kind of natural events happening in a film. I don't think boring. I wouldn't use the word boring. I think anybody who said it was boring, or at least, you know, more boring than average, are just probably not a Sofia Coppola fan. Even her war one, Antoinette, focuses more on her marrying Antoinette and her relationship with, I think, what, Francis II, Ferdinand II. Anyways, it deals with Marianne.
Louis the 16th.
Yeah, not Louis the 16th, but her brother too.
Oh, right.
Yeah, no, not Louis. Yeah, I know about all that. I'm taking a French Revolution right now, so I better know about that. But yeah, her films deal with social matters. So I don't really know what people were, what their goal was. There was actually some elements, it almost seemed, where she made it even more calm than Lost in Translation. What I found really cool is it was almost purposeful that even though this film was set in New York, it was very rare there was a scene with a mass amount of other people in it. You know, it was her dad, Bill Murray. It was always the restaurants where there's like nobody else in the room. All their hangouts were at night, and him driving along in streets, you know, that there weren't many two people walking on the sidewalk. And yeah, I think even though New York, it gave a focus on them, and even more so, it gave us the feeling that she had, which was separation, right, from her husband and a lot of everything else going on in her life.
Right. It's... I mean,
but I can see why some interpret that as boring.
Well, I think the lack of action, if you will, is kind of the point, because obviously the whole plot of the film is about how the Rashida Jones character is feeling bored, and she's wondering if her husband is bored and is straying, and her feeling like her life is kind of, she's going through a monotony, and her life is monotonous, and so I think that people mistake the substance for the style in that regard. And the whole thing about the New York, as you were talking about, it's not like the people packed portions of New York, and this is kind of very the places in New York where people live, not necessarily where people travel to or visit on vacation, or the touristy areas. This is like portions of New York where people live and work, and so maybe it that's another reason why it doesn't feel quite as packed. This is the lived-in area of New York, the non-touristy areas, which I always enjoy seeing in movies.
Yeah, so it was a nice setting for that as well. But I meant to, like, all the restaurants they go to and everything, right? And I found in Lost in Translation, it was the same, except he was in a different country. So there's an excessive look at, you know, the streets and the crossings in Tokyo. But, yeah, even if it wasn't on purpose, it was just the reasoning was the setting in New York was a really nice one, more of a, I guess, realistic look, or one that can have us focus more on the social matters, as opposed to one maybe set in Manhattan or something. We're going to be focused too much on all the things going on in good old Central Park and Madison Square, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. Even if it wasn't on purpose, it still, I don't know, worked out for me.
It's still been a really good year for like New York set movies with I mentioned this when Candace and I reviewed Vampires versus the Bronx, which the Bronx is an area that doesn't get a lot of love, but there's also the movie re-reviewed 40-year-old version where people were I think that's mostly Harlem, so it's you know, it's been, you know, even going all the way back to the end of last year with Uncut Gems, which takes place in the Diamond District, which is another area that doesn't get a lot of movie love. So it's been a really good movie year for New York, even if, you know, all things considered, you know, back in the spring with COVID. So they can take some pride in that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, and just going off the visuals, I thought she did a really great job there. Very tame colors going on. We didn't have any, you know, hyperbolized verts or anything. It was just nice, calm. She doesn't really have any like cinematography work that stands out, but it was a nice visuals. It was all the visuals I needed to pay enough attention to the main characters.
Yeah,
I found that.
Yeah,
exactly. In Blind Rain and others, she does do even more of a heightening of the contrast of certain colors. But I think in this one, she purposely just more tame ones, and that really put me in the kind of mellow mode, you know. That I think she wanted us to get into. Yeah, exactly. And I think her colorization really helped with that too. It was very tame, not a lot of really bright verts going on.
No, the mellow tone is, I think, maybe mellow is a good word. I think that's what people are mistaking for the boredom. But it is very mellow. It is very laid back. There's no kind of histrionics. Like even in scenes where you're expecting fireworks, there's no fireworks because, I mean, people don't really act that way in real life.
Yeah. There's nothing that goes overboard when it comes to the portrayal of New York and the antics they get up to.
Right. And it's all about sort of like the false expectation of that, too, because the whole point of like the Jenny Slate character, who she her daughter goes to the same school as Rashida Jones's character. And all through the film, we get this like storyline that we never see or participate in of Jenny Slate seeing this other man. And, you know, everything the way she describes it, it's like a romance novel. She's like living in the middle of a romance novel, or at least she thinks she is, or she's acting like she is. And then we get to the end of her story, and we find out later that this guy she thought she was falling madly in love with was actually married and was stepping out on his wife, and that kind of ends up going nowhere for her. But in the middle of this, in the middle of like Rashida Jones feeling this monotony and boredom, you have Jenny Slate here being incredibly hyperactive about her own person, which again, we never see, but you know, and it just sort of feeds into this expectation that life is constantly exciting and it's constantly edge of your seat and you never know what's coming around the corner. And it's, that's just not the way it is. And I think that's what Sofia Coppola is trying to get at.
Yeah, and that was just a really funny, I wouldn't even say side plot. It was very, very minimal. But yeah, that just kind of really helped get us more immersed and enjoy the characters a bit more. I also thought it was cool because Rashida like never once responds. So again, I think that kind of shows her she's not in a great place, right? She's kind of separated from all this other crap going on, more worried about whether the weigh-in is cheating. You know, right. So I thought that was a small little addition there. There was also, I briefly had a conspiracy theory that she was the one. If Wayans was cheating, it was maybe her, right? I know she wasn't. She didn't seem like his type, but I was like, hey, you know what? Who knows what's going to happen? I don't know if that'd be a Sofia Coppola maneuver, but yeah.
Interesting. I did not get that feeling, but it is sort of funny that, you know, Jenny Slate's kind of a, she's not a big name, but she's, definitely, someone who is showing up a lot in different, capacities. So, I mean, it does seem kind of like a waste of her talents that she's in these, like,
such a minimal role. I was a little disappointed with that as well. Yeah. I don't know. I'm worried I don't know. She was fine. She seemed kind of minimal in the last bit, but it could be because she's working on some really great films. You know, who knows?
Well, it could be. I mean, it's speaks to the focus of the film. I mean, it is very much on this this marriage between Rashida Jones and Marlon Wayans, and the interference of by the father, played by Bill Murray.
Yeah.
It's interesting to think about at the end of the film. Speaking of conspiracy theories, because I was wondering if Sofia Coppola was trying to say something about that, because at the end of the film, when you get to the resolution between the married couple, you wonder just, or you realize actually just how much of this was like from the mind of the Bill Murray character, Felix, who has this history of philandering on the various women on in his life, and how much of it was like just him spinning these, frankly, conspiracy theories about what Marlon Wayans was up to in his personal life.
But making them seem understandable. And, right. Of course, Rashida, as his daughter, also was, able to view it as understandable. Even though, I'd say it was a little over the top.
Because she was susceptible to his conspiracies, because she had, you know, grown up with this man who cheated on every woman he was with. Mm-hmm. So, well, why wouldn't he? Why wouldn't her husband also cheat? The pump was primed for years for Rashida Jones to receive that message.
Well, and Sophie Coppola did a really good job of also making us question whether he was being a good husband or not, right? It was, I don't know, Bill Murray had me. You started convincing me that the guy was cheating, right? And I thought they did that very well. They did that very well, but they also a very minimal amount of dialogue from the Wayne, right? But again, that made it even more clear that it was kind of forming into a conspiracy theory, or at least an overassumption through her dad. But like I said, right. At the midpoint of the film, you're kind of on her side. It makes sense, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, it also makes sense in sort of like in movies, we always kind of feel like we're being led somewhere to a main point. And also that we're being led to like a great big conflict, you know, I think we're supposed to think this is all leading up to like some sort of Kramer versus Kramer.
Exactly. Well, it was actually a lot like the 40-year-old version, in the sense that it dealt a bit into midlife crisis, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of issues in that going on. But again, it didn't bring that up. Like, it didn't go super deep into that as the topic. It's just something natural that her character would, of course, be feeling at the time, right? She was 39. So there was, of course, some stress there too, and I thought that was well done.
Well, it's also about miscommunication, right? Because she's like, she's constantly saying to Marlon Wayans, like, I can't get into the book, because she's a writer and she's trying to write a book, and you know, she's like, I can't find a way into it. I can't, you know, I used to be a night owl, and that's when I would write, and now obviously she can't with two little kids that she has to take care of while he's at work, and he keeps like saying, oh yeah, you'll get it. And it's like, yeah, he's being a supportive husband, sure, but he's not really listening to her either, because what she's trying to say is like, you are out there, you know, making a success of yourself, and at the same time I don't have what I need to try and make myself a success either. And it's very innocuous, it's very what's the word I'm looking for? It's very like kind of passive aggressive, not really aggressive, but it's very passive, but it's also very subtle. And the film is filled with a lot of subtle moves like that. It's again, there's nothing really big to it, which I think people misunderstand.
Well, yeah, I still don't fully understand what they wanted. Lost in Translation doesn't, it's not major. I don't think nothing crazy really happens. It's a little different. He's in Japan, right? But I don't think, I don't know. It's been a while since I saw it, but like, even at the very end, you don't hear what he says to Scarlett Johansson. So I really don't think, it's just kind of him doing commercials and kind of living a mellow kind of late midlife sort of thing, right? Kind of dealing with age, right? Have you seen it? Does anything, like, is there any, like, huge surprises in Lost in Translation?
Not that I can think of. You're right. But yeah. I was thinking about that, too, that it's kind of like her going back to first principles in a way, after, like, her last two films was The Beguiling, or The Beguiled, which has a kind of thriller element to it, and then the one before that was The Bling Ring, which was kind of like...
The Bling Ring? That's the thing, the Bling Ring, very tame, very, very, not any huge surprises or anything, right? Like, I guess the whole plot is kind of more exciting, but it's a right. historical event. It's something that actually happened, and it's just a very kind of tame look at it, right? So I really don't understand the people who are saying this one is boring, at least the people who are claiming to be Coppola fans. Coppola.
But at the same time, the thing with The Bling Ring is that it's very over. In a way, it's kind of over the top, and it dabbles in celebrity culture. And you have Paris Hilton.
That's true.
Having a cameo. They shot it in Paris Hilton's house because she was one of the people who were robbed in the real life Bling Ring story. And so you have this kind of like celebrity tantalization by osmosis kind of thing.
Osmosis Jones, Bill Murray, right? Sorry.
Is that the one with the detective that's like the blood vessel? And
Yeah. Oh, of course.
Okay.
Oh, well, that, yeah, you're not. Or if you're like my age, like it's, yeah, you watched it billions of times. Okay. I loved it. Yeah. What were we talking about? Osmosis Jones? I thought it was a good film, but I do think Bill Murray was actually a better actor in this, perhaps. So,
in Osmosis Jones or On the Rocks?
Whichever the viewers prefer. No. I love Osmosis Jones. He was this was his classic artistic actions. Yeah, he was great.
And he was singing in this, which he doesn't do a lot of singing in the movies.
That was cool. His character, we haven't really talked to him. His character was great, interesting all around. But again, it doesn't go like super in depth to him because it's Rashida's point of view, right? She doesn't really fully know everything that's going on. But he's a paint seller, you know, and that's one of the most interesting professions. So,
I think the idea, though, is that he is not a very deep person. I mean, even though he's full of these little factoids and he, you know, these little things that, you know, he understands the mind of the man. I'm not 100% sure he's that deep a person, but
I feel like that, even though he's an art dealer and like does love art, just being like a regular old Joe at the same time is his like depth in his character, you know, and I think he knows that and kind of embraces it. I think he just realized that everybody loves him, and he takes advantage of that.
Right.
But no, he is definitely not the usual kind of more, not professional art dealer, but more just the kind of art dealer who, I don't know, what are art dealers usually like? More calm. A lot of the time it's just like a regular profession. There's someone who has a lot of intellectual knowledge towards art and do sales and go to official things, where he was, like you said, more of a a loose individual who maybe didn't have as much evident intelligence as some other art dealers.
I wonder how much of it, too, because it feels like he was kind of, there's maybe some kind of indication he's something of a scam artist, too, that he's not completely on the up and up.
No, he's probably a bit of a scam artist. He seems like that kind of guy.
Yeah, he's, there's something, I mean, the Wes Anderson's kind of by proxy part of the whole Coppola clan, but I did feel like Bill Murray was playing a bit of a Wes Anderson character in a Sofia Coppola movie.
Yeah, I get that. He also, though, he was trying to play that kind of dad who can be a bit, you know, over the top, where the kind of dad who takes the focus away from the kid. But no, I know what you mean. It definitely, even at some points, was a bit too wild, a bit too, similar to a Wes Anderson character.
He had a very Royal Tenenbaum kind of feel.
And like, I checked, and that actually came first before the Lost in Translation. So,
true. Yeah, it's like the whole scene where he's like trying to get over the wall. He's, you know, even though he's older and he's not terribly athletic, and like some of his interactions with the kids and teaching them how to play poker and to use their poker face, it's there's something very. It feels very kind of like shady, like not that he's like a bad kind of shady, like he's I don't know, but the character is not entirely on the up. And you kind of see that with there's the scene where they get stopped by the police while they're following the husband. He's kind of being a jerk. And then he notices that the nameplate on the police officer and is like, "Oh, you must be so-and-so's son. I know your father. I know your grandfather. Aren't we all cool friends here?" And he turns it all around. And it's very, very much in the way like a con artist does, where are you, before you know it, you're their best friend. And it seems to come very, very easily to, and the seed also kind of essays just how easily he kind of is able to lure in even his own daughter, who understands his ways. And, you know, he just sort of brings them along and, you know, manages to get exactly what he wants out of a situation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was thinking a lot of it, of the time him, I would be really care if he had a spinoff just as an art dealer. Cause he reminded me a lot of, Elmer de Hurry from the, Orson Welles film F for Fake. And it's all about the one really interesting, wild, art dealer who fakes the art, and he's like pretty shot for shot like Bill Murray in this. So I think that shows both that, yeah, maybe a bit too similar to some over the top Wes Anderson, but a really interesting art painter, you know. And I think it didn't mention it in the film, I think he's a forger. I think he's definitely doing some forging, and I think his characteristics really show that. Yeah,
there is that scene where they're kind of looking at the painting and in the bar, and he's kind of like breaking it down. It's like, yeah, there's more going on with this guy than meets the eye. It's, you know, the way he knows everybody and the way he kind of feels very comfortable in like whether it's a Mexican resort or some, but the way he knows like the concierges at like hotels in London and everything, it's like it's very like he has to know everybody because he has to stay one step ahead of probably some pretty shady people.
And that just all further shows what he has to deal with. And you know what, like we were talking about the Wes Anderson, maybe because his character was supposed to be a bit over the top, Sofia Coppola was just like, "Do it, Bill Murray. Be just pretend I'm Anderson, right?" So you know, or he was just kind of feeling those vibes. He was trying to get into a similar character stance. But I know what you mean. I guess it didn't fully pay off in some aspects, but I do think he was still a great actor in it. I really enjoyed the car, his whole car all around. That scene was just really, that was really funny.
Yeah, the Roadster. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not exactly a, I don't want to say it's not a street worthy car. I mean, obviously you can drive it, but it's, you know,
no, it's like a show. It's like an art show.
Yes, that's it. It was, it was part of the show because it clearly doesn't run right. It is clearly like too sporty for like everyday driving. It's just it's just part of the routine. It's part of the act.
It's part of him. Exactly. He's a character.
Yeah. And, he's a character. Exactly. That's the whole point. He's a character.
Yeah. And Rashida Jones too. A very great acting job, but kind of the exact opposite. More like Wayne's, not reserved, but more just kind of not calm, more of a quiet individual. She's kind of seemed bummed the whole film, right? But she's supposed to. She's dealing with those issues. And I thought she did, a really great job of that. A really good companionship between the two. Really good lines bouncing off each other and just, presenting some good vibes.
Yeah, they're a lot of fun. Rashida Jones.
She's great.
She is great. It feels like there's a scene near the end where she yells at Bill. She doesn't quite yell at him, but she stands up to Bill Murray. It's like, you're kind of dragged me into all this craziness with you, where it feels like there's a bit of catharsis there where she's kind of felt trapped in the midst of all her father's craziness for years. And
But in very interesting contrast to the other family members too, because none of them seem to care about her as much.
Yes.
None of them seem to help her. So that I did find that interesting too. He may seem the most selfish in some aspects, but he's also the only one who did care about his daughter. He took it a bit too far, but he cared about her. His passion became helping his daughter out.
He cares about her enough to meddle. He cares about her enough to meddle. That's nice on the one hand. On the other hand, there's a fine line between meddling and actually not
too deep.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but no, their relationship was great. The kids weren't in it much. So I don't really have any opinions on their acting.
The kids were fine. It's not really about the kids, but
other than Jenny Slate too. Yeah, that was about it. Very minimal roles from the Wayans co-workers. Mm. They were all fine. But
even though they had Jessica Henwick as the presumptive other woman.
Yeah. I still know, She was very good at making you definitely think, oh, she's doing something bad. They're all bad. All
she's,
co-workers
she's up
are bad. They're evil.
She's up to something being young and attractive.
Oh, she's Nymeria in Game of Thrones. Oh, okay. Yeah. People's favorite character. Number one. Every list. You check every list currently. Top 10 character Game of Thrones. She's always number one. She's always number one. Good on her.
All right. We'll let people do that research on their own time. In the meantime, Peter, if people want to find you on the internet, how can they find you?
That's it.
That's it.
To wrap up, would you suggest people watch it?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah, me too. I would recommend it. I would actually say even better than Lost in Translation in some aspects. I'd find it has a bit less pretentiousness than some of her earlier ones.
Statement. But...
And yeah, well, I meant it more on like the Wes Anderson kind of. Pretentious can still be very artful choice, right? Like David Lynch is one of my favorite directors. His films could have some pretentiousness, but I found this one was more just as she intended, just a mellow film. Nice calm dramedy with some great acting, but nothing that's gonna really have you jump right off your couch, A critically well done, calm, nice, mellow film. So yeah, I'm Peter Wesley Salmon on TikTok and on good old fashioned Twitter, Mr. Tarak, and YouTube. Good old YouTube.
Alrighty. And that's it for this week's show. We hope you liked it. And if you would like to listen to it again, you can find it on our website at endcreditsradioshow.com. You can download it from the Guelph Politicast channel every Friday at Podbean, or you can get it through your favorite podcast app. At Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. And speaking of Spotify, you can get that playlist of all the music we play here on End Credits.
You can just open your Spotify app and search for End Credits on CFRU. You can find us on social media, on Facebook at End Credits Radio Show, or on Twitter at End Credits Radio. I will be back tomorrow at 5 p.m. for our news and politics on Open Sources Guelph with Scotty Hertz. In the meantime, I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can go to my politics site at guelphpolitico.ca, or you can read my writing about horror movies at nofspodcast.com. You can stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio. We will be back next Wednesday at 3 p.m. for another great episode of End Credits, and we will see you then.